ओम जनचमिनंदस्य जनाजनाक्षसस्मृतानुगमो तस्माय श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्य महाभीष्टं स्थापितं येन मुचले सायं प्रतिदानं ददाति वंशकोपजुर्भश्च कृपसन्नभैश्च पतितनं भवने वैष्णवे नमो नमः First chapter of Canto 9. King Prickett said, "My Lord, Sukadev Goswami, you have elaborately described all the periods of the various Manus." In the 8th canto, and all the descendants of Manus were described actually from the 3rd canto onward. Described all the periods of the various Manus, and within those periods, the wonderful activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who has unlimited potency. I am fortunate to have heard all of this from you. Satyavrata, the saintly king of Dravida Desh, who received spiritual knowledge at the end of the last millennium by the grace of the Supreme, later became Vaivasvata Manu, the son of Divaswan, and the next Manvantara, period of Manu. I have received this knowledge from you. I also understand that such kings as Ikshaku were his sons, as you have already explained. O greatly fortunate Sukadeva Goswami, O great Brahmana, kindly describe to us separately the dynasties and characteristics of all those kings, all the descendants of Vaivasvata Manu. For we are always eager to hear such topics from you. Kindly tell us about the abilities of all the celebrated kings born in the dynasty of Vaivasvata Manu, including those who have already passed, those who may appear in the future, and those who exist at present. Sutta Goswami said, "When Sukadeva Goswami, the greatest knower of religious principles, was thus requested by Maharaj Prickett in the assembly of all the scholars learned in Vedic knowledge, he then proceeded to speak." Sukadeva Goswami continued, "O King, subduer of your enemies, now hear from me in great detail about the dynasty of Manu. I shall explain it as much as possible, although one cannot say everything about it even in hundreds of years. The transcendental Supreme Person, the Supersoul of all living entities, who are in different statuses of life, high and low, existed at the end of the millennium, when neither this manifested cosmos nor anything else but him existed." Prabhupada's short purport. Taking the proper position from which to describe the dynasty of Manu, Sukadeva Goswami begins by saying that when the entire world is inundated, only the Supreme Personality of Godhead exists, and nothing else. Sukadeva Goswami will now describe how the Lord creates other things, one after another. O King Prickett, from the navel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead was generated a golden lotus on which the four-faced Lord Brahma took his birth. From the mind of Lord Brahma, Marichi took birth. And from the semen of Marichi, Kasyapa appeared from the womb of the daughter of Daksha Maharaj. From Kasyapa, by the womb of Aditi, Vivaswan took birth. So Aditi gave birth from Kasyapa to all the demigods, and Diti, as we heard in the previous canto, gave birth to the demons, the asuras. So Vivaswan, the great demigod, the sun god, took his birth. O king, best of the Bharata dynasty, from Vivaswan, by the womb of Sangya, Shraddhadev Manu was born. Shraddhadev Manu, having conquered his senses, begot 10 sons in the womb of his wife Shraddha. The names of these sons were Ikshaku, Nriga, Saryati, Dishta, Drista, Karusaka, Drishyanta, Prasidra, Nabhag, and Kavi. Manu at first had no sons. Therefore, in order to get a son for him, the great saint Vasishta, who was very powerful in spiritual knowledge, performed the sacrifice to satisfy the demigods Mitra and Varuna. During that sacrifice, Shraddha, Manu's wife, who was observing the vow of subsisting only by drinking milk, approached the priest offering the sacrifice, offered obeisances to him, and begged for a daughter. So Manu, Bhavasvata Manu, wanted a son, but his wife asked the priest, who was performing the sacrifice, for a daughter. Told by the priest, now offer oblations, the person in charge of the oblations, the priest, he took clarified butter to offer. He then remembered, the request of Manu's wife and performed the sacrifice while chanting the word Vajshat. It doesn't give any explanation of that, but Manu had begun that sacrifice for the sake of getting a son. But because the priest was diverted by the request of Manu's wife, a daughter named Ila was born. Upon seeing the daughter, Manu was not very satisfied. Thus he spoke to his guru, Vasishta, as follows, Prabhupada's short purport. Because Manu had no issue, he was pleased at the birth of the child, even though a daughter, and gave her the name Ila. Later, because he was not very satisfied to see the daughter instead of a son, because he had no issue, he was certainly very glad at the birth of Ila, but his pleasure was temporary. My Lord, all of you, this is what Manu said to Vasishtha Muni. Now, in this canto, there are many, 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 many little stories. There are many wonderful pastimes in this canto, actually. There's bigger pastimes. There's the starting in chapter 4, Ambarish Maharaj, very important pastime. And then later on, there will be the pastime of Lord Ramachandra. They'll be explained in two. The pastimes will be explained in two chapters. And then also Pururava, interesting pastime, which really gets completed in the 11th canto. Then Parsaram and King Jayati. And ultimately, when the dynasties are all traced, it will lead to the birth of Lord Krishna, which begins in is described in the 10th canto. And in addition to these, you could say, major pastimes, which are described somewhat abbreviatedly, but also there are many, 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 many little pastimes. And they're all quite unique and interesting. And we'll hear one of them right now. And they all seem to have some lesson or another attached to them. Or they're very unique. And also in many, but quite a few of the pastimes, Vasishtha Muni has a part. So he lives a very long time because one set of kings comes and then their children come and then a pastime comes from their children and then they pass away. And then another set of kings come and their children and they some pastimes and they pass away. And this goes on generation after generation after generation. One certainly gets a feeling of the changing, ephemeral nature of the material world, because right now we're thinking that we are very significant and very important, and here I'm performing this activity and that activity and I have my plan and my children will come and my parents are there. But one after another in these chapters we'll hear how the plans come, they may fructify, they may not fructify, they never fructify exactly the way you want them to. But then they go, whether they were successful or whether they were unsuccessful. The person dies and his children take his place and they do this and they do that and they do that. Then their children and their children. And here we are thinking of my very important plan, as if I'm the center of something very great and wonderful, and actually we're here for just a spot, a spark, and then gone. So what is the right thing actually to do during that time? That question actually comes to mind when we get a glimpse of the passing of time as we do in these different pastimes. So there's quite a few things to watch, and throughout all these pastimes, the one generation after the next, Vashishtha Muni still remains, and it's quite interesting to watch what he does too. So a lot of things to think about during these pastimes. The purports in this canto are probably shorter in many places and less of them than any other canto. So anyway, the king, Manu, wishing a son, he said to Vashishtha Muni, "My lord, all of you are expert in chanting the Vedic mantras. How then has the result been opposite to the one desired? I wanted a son, and I got a daughter. This is a matter for lamentation. There should not have been such a reversal of the results of the Vedic mantras." Prabhupada's purport. In this age, the performance of jagya has been forbidden because no one can properly chant the Vedic mantras. If Vedic mantras are chanted properly, the desire for which a sacrifice is performed must be successful. Therefore, the Hare Krishna chant is called the Maha Mantra, the great exalted mantra, above all the other Vedic mantras, because simply chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra brings so many beneficial effects. As explained by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Cheto Dharpanam Arjanam Bhavamaha Devagni Navapanam Shaya Karai Vachandrika Vataranam Vidyavaru Jivanam Anandam Bhudi Varadhanam Pratipadam Punam Amrita Asvadanam Sarvatma Snapanam Param Vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtanam. Glory to Sri Krishna Sankirtan, which cleanses the heart of all the dust accumulated for years and extinguishes the fire of conditional life, of repeated birth and death, compared to a fire because it burns. This Sankirtan movement is the prime benediction for humanity at large because it spreads the rays of the benediction moon. It is the life of all transcendental knowledge. It increases the ocean of transcendental bliss, and it enables us to fully taste the nectar for which we are always anxious. Therefore, the best performance of jagya given to us is the Sankirtan jagya. Yagyai Sankirtana Prayaya Jantihi Sumedasa. Those who are intelligent take advantage of the greatest jagya in this age by chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra in congregation. When the Hare Krishna Mantra is chanted by many men together, the chanting is called Sankirtan. And as a result of such jagya, there will be clouds in the sky. Yagyad bhavanti parjanya. In these days of drought, people can gain relief from scarcity of rain and food by the simple method of the Hare Krishna jagya. Indeed, this can relieve all of human society. At present, there are droughts throughout Europe and America, and people are suffering. But if people take this Krishna consciousness movement seriously, if they stop their sinful activities and chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, all their problems will be solved without difficulty. In other processes of jagya, there are difficulties because there are no learned scholars who can chant the mantras perfectly well. Nor is it possible to secure the ingredients to perform the jagya, because human society is poverty-stricken and men are devoid of Vedic knowledge, and the power to chant the Vedic mantra, the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, is the only shelter. People should be intelligent enough to chant it. Yagyai Sankirtanaya Prayer Yajantihi Sumedasa. Those whose brains are dull cannot understand this chanting, nor can they take to it. So Manu said to Vashishtha, "How is it possible that the yajna, the sacrifice was performed to have a son, and yet a daughter was born. You are all self-controlled, he continued, well-balanced in mind and aware of the absolute truth. And because of austerities and penances, you are completely cleansed of all material contamination. Your words, like those of the demigods, are never baffled. Then how is it possible that your determination has failed? Prabhupada's purport. We have learned from many Vedic literatures that a benediction or curse given by the demigods never proves false. By performing austerities and penances, by controlling the senses and mind, and by achieving full knowledge of the absolute truth, one is fully cleansed of material contamination. Then one's words and blessings, like those of the demigods, are never a failure. So Vasishtha Muni, next verse, speaks about him. The most powerful great-grandfather Vasishtha, after hearing these words of Manu, understood the discrepancy on the part of the priest. Thus he spoke as follows to the son of the sun god. This discrepancy in the objective is due to your priest's deviation from the original purpose. However, by my own prowess, I shall give you a good sign. Sukadeva Goswami said, O King Cricket, after the most famous and powerful Vasishtha made this decision, he offered prayers to the Supreme Person Vishnu to transform Ila into a male. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supreme Controller, being pleased with Vasishtha, gave him the benediction he desired. Thus Ila was transformed into a very fine male named Sudumna, or King Cricket. That hero Sudumna, accompanied by a few ministers and associates and riding on a horse brought from Sindhu Pradesh, once went to the forest to hunt. He wore armor and was decorated with bows and arrows, so he was well fortified, he was powerful, and he was very beautiful. While following the animals and killing them, he reached the northern part of the forest. There in the north, at the bottom of Mount Meru, in a forest known as Sukumar, where Lord Shiva always enjoys with Uma, Sudumna entered that forest. O King Parikit, as soon as Sudumna, who was expert in subduing enemies, entered the forest, he saw himself transformed into a female, and his horse transformed into a mare. When his followers also saw their identities transformed and their sexes reversed, they were all very morose and just looked at one another. Maharaj Cricket said, so this is this transformation, this is not a new thing. Maharaj Cricket said, O most powerful Brahmana, why was this place so empowered? As soon as they walked into the forest, they changed their genders. And who made it so powerful? Kindly answer this question, for I'm very eager to hear about this. Sukadeva Goswami answered, great saintly persons who strictly observe the rules and regulations and whose own effulgence dissipated all the darkness of all directions once came to see Lord Shiva in that forest. When the goddess Ambika saw the great saintly persons, she was very much ashamed because at that time she was naked. She immediately got up from the lap of her husband and tried to cover her breast. Seeing Lord Shiva and Parvati engaged in sexual affairs, all the great saintly persons immediately desisted from going further and departed for the ashram of Naranarayan. Thereupon, just to please his wife, Lord Shiva said, any male entering this place shall immediately become a female. Since that time, no male has entered that forest. But now King Sudumna, having been transformed into a female, began to walk with his associates from one forest to another. Purport. In Bhagavad Gita 2.22 it is said, Vasam sijyanani atavahaya navani grananti naroparani tata sarirani vahaya janani anyani samyutti navani dehi. As a person puts on new garments, giving up old ones, the soul accepts new material bodies, giving up the old and useless ones. The body, Prabhupada explains, is just like a dress. And here, this is proved. So Dumnya and his associates were all male, which means that their souls were covered by male dress. But now, they became female, which means that their dress was changed. The soul, however, remains the same. It is said that by modern medical treatment, a male can be transformed into a female, and a female into a male. The body, however, has no connection with the soul. The body can be changed either in this life or the next. Therefore, one who has knowledge of the soul and how the soul transmigrates from one body to another does not pay attention to the body, which is nothing but a covering dress. Pandita Samadarshana, such a person sees the soul, which is part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, he is Samadarshi, a learned person. So he was wandering through the forest. So Dumnya had been transformed into the best of beautiful women who could excite sexual desires and was surrounded by other women. Upon seeing this beautiful woman loitering near his ashram, Buddha, the son of the moon, immediately desired to enjoy her. The beautiful woman also desired to accept Buddha, the son of the king of the moon, as her husband. Thus Buddha begot in her, and her womb, a son named Pururava. I heard from reliable sources that King Sidumnya, the son of Manu, having thus achieved femininity, remembered his familial spiritual master Vasishta. Upon seeing Sidumnya's deplorable condition, Vasishta was very much aggrieved. Desiring for Sidumnya to regain his maleness, Vasishta again began to worship Lord Shankara, Shiva. O King Parikit, Lord Shiva was pleased with Vasishta, therefore, to satisfy him and to keep his own word to Parvati, Lord Shiva said to that saintly person, "Your disciple Sidumnya may remain a male for 1 month and a female for the next. In this way, he may rule the world as he likes." Thus being favored by the spiritual master, according to the words of Lord Shiva, Sidumnya regained his desired maleness every alternate month, and in this way ruled the kingdom, although the citizens were not satisfied with this. Purport. The citizens could understand that the king was transformed into a female every alternate month, and therefore could not discharge his royal duty. Consequently, they were not very satisfied. What do you reckon, Prahlad Bhakti? This would make a good movie? Just like Queen Elizabeth. O King, Sidumnya had three very pious sons named Utkal, Gaya, and Bimal, who became the king of Dakshinapata. Thereafter, when the time was ripe, when Sidumnya, the king of the world, was sufficiently old, he delivered the entire kingdom to his son, Pururava, and entered the forest. Purport. So all this drama and change of karma and change of gender, and the citizens were unhappy with it, but yet every alternate month, male, female, female, male, back and forth and back and forth, change of mind. So much difficulty. He had his children. He had sons. As when he was the male, he had Pururava. When he was a female, all this. And then in the end, he goes to the forest to perform his austerities, to become Krishna conscious. Prabhupada's purport. According to the Vedic system, within the institution of Varna and Ashrama, one must leave his family life after he reaches 50 years of age. Panchasad udvam vanam prajit. Thus, Sidumnya followed the prescribed regulations of Vanashrama by leaving his kingdom, the kingdom, and going to the forest to complete his spiritual life. So, are there lessons in that?
You have to be open, tolerant. Male one with 1 month, and female the next, and managing two families, and
yeah,
all the people being dissatisfied,
and then in the end you go to the forest anyway, and it's over. All the drama ends. And also, if you have karma, yet karma, a soul entered that had the karma to be born in a female body, and then by some change. He was a male, but your karma catches up on you no matter what you do. And then he became a female again, but still he had that karma, so mixed like that. Yes, it sounds quite awkward, doesn't it?
but the thing is that, like, we might have been doing that for so many lifetimes.
Yes.
We don't think that consider the shame of
it. Yes.
All that it is for the soul.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Because the tendency is to identify with the particular dress that one is wearing, of the male or the female. Nice point. So he really must have understood that he wasn't his body, because he kept changing and back and forth and back and forth. But why don't we understand that about our minds? Because our minds change like that. Sometimes we want something, sometimes we hate something. Sometimes we want it, we hate it, we have a plan, we give up the plan. Sometimes people criticize us, sometimes people love us. Sometimes we're upset, sometimes we're happy. Chapter 2, The Dynasties of the Sons of Manu. Sukadev Goswami said, thereafter, when his son Sudumnya had thus gone to the forest to accept the order of Vanaprastha, Vaivaswata Manu Shraddhadev, being desirous of getting more sons, performed severe austerities on the bank of the Jamuna for 100 years. And then, because of his desire for sons, the Manu known as Shraddhadev worshipped the Supreme Lord, the personality of Godhead, the Lord of the demigods, and thus he got 10 sons exactly like himself. Amongst them, Ikshaku was the eldest. Among these sons, Prasidra, following the order of his spiritual master, was engaged as a protector of cows. He would stand all night with a sword to give the cows protection. Purport. So one generation after next, everyone has their stories. And there's always pastimes, but they pass very quickly. Sudumnya, now gone. He's history. So now Prasidra, standing at night with his sword to protect the cows. Purport. One who becomes Virasan takes the vow to stand all night with a sword to give protection to the cows. Because Prasidra was engaged in this way, it is to be understood that he had no dynasty. We can further understand that this vow accepted by Prasidra, by this vow, how essential it is to protect the cows. Some son of a Kshatriya would take this vow to protect the cows from ferocious animals even at night. What then is to be said of sending cows to slaughterhouses? This is the most sinful activity in human society. A plot, a conspiracy to kill the cows and the bulls. To have an organized system to kill them. Horrendous. The most innocent and beneficial of all animals, a conspiracy to kill them. This is a mark of Kali Yuga. When there are no proper Kshatriyas and Brahmins, this is what happens. The leaders make a plot, and one of the most important elements of the plot is to kill the cows. They blame everything on the cows. In the Vedic culture, milk is thought of as the miracle food. The sages sometimes would live just on milk alone and get all nourishment. And now they say, oh, milk is very bad for you. Cholesterol. Whatever the Vedic culture says, they'll say just the opposite. And even with this greenhouse gas emissions thing, you know what they say? The problem is that the cows, with the methane from the cow dung and everything, this is the problem. It's all the cows' fault. They're crazy. It's actually demonic. And then therefore, all the cows should be killed. Yes.
I heard some good news on the radio yesterday. Abattoir in Harvey is laying off half its staff because people are not eating beef as much as they used to anymore.
Very good. So all the wars come from the reactions for these things. And there's so many diseases spread by these, by this, this animal, because they feed them all the antibiotics and the animal killing. Horrible, horrible. Disgraceful. Once at night, while it was raining, a tiger entered the land of the cow shed. Upon seeing the tiger, all the cows who were lying down got up in fear and scattered here and there on the land. When the very strong tiger seized the cow screamed in distress and fear. And Prasadra, hearing the screaming, immediately followed the sound. He took up his sword, but because the stars were covered by the clouds, he mistook the cow for the tiger and mistakenly cut off the cow's head with great force. Because the tiger's ear had been cut by the edge of the sword, the tiger was very afraid, and it fled from that place while bleeding on the street. In the morning, when Prasadra, who was quite able to subdue his enemy, saw that he had killed the cow, although at night he thought he had killed the tiger, he was very unhappy. Although Prasadra committed the sin unknowingly, his family priest, Vashishta, cursed him, saying, "In your next life you shall not be able to become a Kshatriya. Instead, you shall take birth as a Sudra because of killing the cow." Prabhupada's purport. It appears that Vashishta was not free from tamagun, the mode of ignorance. As the family priest or spiritual master of Prasadra, Vashishta should have taken Prasadra's offense very lightly, but instead Vashishta cursed him to become a Sudra. It is the duty of a family priest not to curse a disciple, but to give him relief from the performance through the performance of some sort of atonement. Vashishta, however, did just the opposite. Therefore, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that he was durmati. In other words, his intelligence was not very good. So many little interesting points in there, in these stories. When the hero Prasadra was thus cursed by his spiritual master, he accepted the curse with folded hands. Then, having controlled his senses, he took the vow of brahmacharya, which is approved by all great sages. Thereafter, Prasadra gained relief from all responsibilities, became peaceful in mind, and established control all over his senses. Being unaffected by material conditions, being pleased with whatever was available by the grace of the Lord to maintain body and soul together, and being equal toward everyone, he gave full attention to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva, who is the transcendental supersoul, free from material contamination. Thus Prasadra, fully satisfied in pure knowledge, always keeping his mind on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, achieved pure devotional service to the Lord and began traveling all over the world without affection for material activities, as if he were deaf, dumb, and blind. With this attitude, Prasadra became a great saint, and when he entered the forest and saw a blazing forest fire, he took this opportunity to burn his body in the fire. Thus he achieved the transcendental spiritual world. Prabhupada's purport. The Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 4:9, "Janma karma chame divyam evam yo vati tatvata tatvadeham puna janma naitimam iti so arjana." One who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities, Krishna says, does not upon leaving this body take his birth again in the material world, but attains my eternal abode or Arjuna. Prasadra, because of his karma, was cursed to take his next birth as a Sudra, but because he took the saintly life, specifically concentrating his mind always upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he became a pure devotee. Immediately after giving up his body in the fire, he reached the spiritual world as mentioned in Bhagavad Gita, Mam Eti, as a result of his devotional situation. Devotional service performed by thinking of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is so powerful that although Prasadra was cursed, he avoided the terrible consequences of becoming a Sudra and instead returned home back to Godhead. Interesting, compare that reaction of Prasadra's to Sudumna's. Sudumna, he was cursed and he was put into a difficult situation, but he continued to rule and that caused some problem like that. And in the end, He took up austerities. But Prasadja, as soon as he got cursed, freedom, self-responsibilities, went to the forest and become fully realized. And he completely defeated the curse and went back to Godhead. He didn't become a Sudra. He went to the spiritual world. As stated in the Brahma Samhita, Yastvindra Gopam Mataravindam Maho Sukama Bandhanurupa Falabhajanamattanoti Karmani Nirdahati Kintu Chabhakti Bhajam Govindamari Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. Those who engage in devotional service are unaffected by the results of their material activities. Otherwise, everyone from the smallest microbe up to the King of Heaven, Indra, is subject to the laws of karma. A pure devotee being always engaged in the service of the Lord is exempt from these laws. So, Sudumna is gone, Prasadra is gone. Being reluctant to accept material enjoyment, Manu's youngest son, whose name was Kavi, gave up the kingdom before attaining full youth. Accompanied by his friends, he went to the forest, always thinking of the self-effulgent Supreme Personality of Godhead within the core of his heart. Thus, he attained perfection. From Karusha, another son of Manu, because he had 10, came the Karusha dynasty, a family of Kshatriyas. The Karusha Kshatriyas were the kings of the northern direction. They were celebrated protectors of Brahminical culture and were all firmly religious. From the son of Manu, named Drishta, came a Kshatriya caste called Darshta, whose members achieved the position of Brahmanas in this world. So the Kshatriyas became Brahmanas. That's a very important point. Then from the son of Manu, named Riga, came Sumati. From Sumati came Bhutajyoti, and from Bhutajyoti came Vasu. Prabhupada's report. Short. Here it is said, Chatram Brahma Bhujam Gitam Chitao. Although the Darshtas belonged to the Kshatriya caste, they were able to convert themselves into Brahmanas. This gives clear evidence supporting the following statement by Narada Muni from 7:11:35. Yasya lakshanam proktam pumso vana vivyanjakam yaranyatra pidrisheta tattanaiva vanirdeshet. If the qualities of one group are found in the men of another, those men should be regarded by their qualities, by their symptoms, not by the caste of their family in which they were born. Birth is not at all important. It is one's qualities that are stressed in all Vedic literature. So he's a very good example of that. The son of Vasu was Pratika, whose son was Ogavan. Ogavan's son was also known as Ogavan, and his daughter was Ogavati. Sudarshana married that daughter. From Narashanta came a son named Chitrasena, and from him a son named Richa. From Richa came Midvan. From Midvan came Purna, and from Purna came Indrasena. So many generations just passing like that, like that, like that. And yet, here we are thinking, oh, I have something very, very, very important to do. From Indrasena came Vittihotra, and it's not over yet. From Vittihotra came Satrasrav. From Satrasrav came the son named Urusrav. From Urusrav came Devadatta. From Devadatta came a son known as Agnivesha, who was the fire god Agni himself. This son, who was a celebrated saint, was well known as Kanina and Jatukarnya. O king, from Anivesha came a Brahminical dynasty known as Agnivesyayana. Now that I have described the descendants of Nirishyanta, let me describe the descendants of Dishta. Please hear from me. Dishta had a son by the name Nibhaga. This Nibhaga, who was different from the Nibhaga described later, became a Vaishya by occupational duty. The son of Nibhaga was known as Balandana. So here is this one Nibhaga, he became a Vaishya. So he spent his whole life performing activities like that, and then change of dress. Some points were up, some points were down, some points were more significant than others, but gone. The son of Nibhaga was known as Baladhan. The son of Baladana was Vatsapriti, and his son was Pramsu. Pramsa's son was Pramati, Pramati's son was Kanitra, Kanitra's son was Chakshush, and his son was Vivimsati. Purport. From Manu, one son became a Kshatriya, another a Brahmana, another a Vaishya. This confirms the statement by Narada Muni, Yasya la lakshanam proktam pumsa varna vivyanjakam. This point is not so controversial at this particular time in the West, but it's controversial in India. But here's the proof. And sometime, and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur wanted to make this point, so therefore he gave brahminical initiation to disciples regardless of their birth. So he fought hard to establish this principle that anyone, if they have the qualities, can take on the brahminical position. So this will be challenged. It's not over yet. This will be challenged. So here's the different proofs. One should always remember that Brahmins, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas should never be regarded as members of a caste by birth. Caste, like cast iron, it's set. And once it's set, it's fixed. So it's not like that. A Brahmin may be changed into a Kshatriya, and a Kshatriya into a Brahmin. Similarly, a Brahmin or Kshatriya may be changed into a Vaishya, and a Vaishya into a Brahmin or Kshatriya. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, Chaturvarnam Maya Shrishtam Guna Karma Vibhagasa. So if one is a Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, never by birth, but by... So one is a Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, never by birth, but by quality. There's a great need of Brahmanas. Therefore, in the Krishna Consciousness Movement, we are trying to train some Brahmanas to guide human society. Because at present there is a scarcity of Brahmanas, the brain of human society is lost, and the brain is that which gives direction. And truly, the direction of society is lost. And instead of having a spiritual direction, that which the Brahmanas are supposed to provide, the direction is just on sense enjoyment, which is really a sudra direction. So the head has to be put on society. Again, that's what Prabhupada's desire was. That's the desire of Mahaprabhu. Because practically everyone is a sudra, no one at the present moment can guide the members of society to the proper path by which to achieve perfection in life. Text 25. The son of Vivimsati was Rumba, whose son was a great and religious king, Kaninetra. Or king, the son of Kaninetra was King Karandham. From Karandham came a son named Avikshit, from Avikshit a son named Maruta, who was the emperor. The great mystic Samvarta, the son of Angira, engaged Maruta in performing a sacrifice at Jagya. The sacrificial paraphernalia of King Maruta was extremely beautiful, for everything was made of gold. Indeed, no other sacrifice could compare to his. In that sacrifice, King Indra became intoxicated by drinking a large quantity of somaras. The Brahmanas received ample contributions, and therefore they were satisfied. For that sacrifice, the various demigods who control the winds offered foodstuffs, and the Vishvadevas were members of the assembly. Purport. Because of the jagya performed by Maruta, everyone was pleased, especially the Brahmins and Kshatriyas. Brahmins are interested in receiving contributions as priests, and Kshatriyas are interested in drinking. All of them, therefore, were satisfied with their different engagements. So the gold that was produced in that sacrifice was later on collected by Maharaj Yudhisthira. It was discarded. There was so much gold, it was discarded. And Maharaj Yudhisthira, when he went to perform the Ashwamedha sacrifices, after he was installed as a king, he had no finances because everything was lost in the battle of Kurukshetra. So Arjuna and maybe Nakula and Sahadev, or I can't remember which of the brothers, they went up north to the place where this was sacrifice performed, and they gathered all the gold, and with that gold they performed the Ashwamedha sacrifices. Maruta's son was Dama. Dama's son was Rajyavardhana, and Rajyavardhana's son was Sudriti, and his son was Nara. The son of Nara was Keval, and his son was Dunduman, whose son was Vegavan. Vegavan's son was Buddha, and Buddha's son was Trinabindu, who became the king of this earth. The best of the apsaras, the highly qualified girl named Alambusha, accepted the similarly qualified Trinabindu as her husband. She gave birth to a few sons and a daughter known as Ilavila, after the great saint Vishrava. The master of mystic yoga received absolute knowledge from his father. He begot in the womb of Ilavila the greatly celebrated son named known as Kuvera, the giver of money. Trinabindu had three sons named Vishal, Sunyabandhu, and Jumaketu. Amongst these three, Vishal created a dynasty and constructed a palace called Vishali. Vaishali. The son of Vishala was known as Hemachandra, his son was Dumraksha, and his son was Samyama, whose sons were Devaj and Krishasva. The son of Krishasva was Somadatta, who performed Aswamedha sacrifices and thus satisfied the Supreme Personality of Godhead Vishnu. By worshipping the Supreme Lord, he achieved the most exalted post, a residence on the planet to which great mystic yogis are elevated. The son of Somadatta was Sumati, whose son was Janmanjaya. All these kings appeared in the dynasty of Vishal, properly maintained the celebrated position of King Trinabandhu. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 9th canto, 2nd chapter of my Bhagavatam, entitled The Dynasties of the Sons of Manu. Any questions or comments? There's only one substantial purport in the next chapter, so why don't we read that as well. This is the 3rd chapter. Sri Sukadev Goswami continued, O King Saryati, another son of Manu was a ruler completely aware of Vedic knowledge. He gave instructions about the functions for the second day of Jagya to be formed by the descendants of Angira. So all all this information is expanded in the Puranas, the ancient Vedic literatures. Saryati had a beautiful lotus-eyed daughter named Sukanya, with whom he went to the forest to see the ashram of Chayavan Muni. So this is an interesting pastime and very instructive. Well, that Sukanya, surrounded by her friends, she was a young girl, was collecting various types of fruit from the trees in the forest. She saw within the hole of an earthworm two things glowing like luminaries. As if induced by providence, the girl ignorantly pierced those two glowworms with a thorn. And when they were pierced, blood began to ooze out of them. Thereupon, all the soldiers of Saryati were immediately obstructed from passing urine and stool. Upon perceiving this, Saryati spoke to his associates in surprise. How strange it is that one of us has attempted to do something wrong to Chayavan Muni, the son of Bhrigu. It certainly appears that someone among us has polluted this ashram. Being very much afraid, the girl Sukanya said to her father, I have done something wrong, for I have ignorantly pierced these two luminous substances with a thorn. After hearing this statement by his daughter, King Saryati was very much afraid. In various ways he tried to appease Chayavan Muni, for it was he who sat within the hole of the earthworm. This Muni was very powerful. King Saryati, being very contemplative and thus understanding Chayavani Muni's purpose, gave his daughter in charity to the sage. Thus released from danger with great difficulty, took permission from Chayavana Muni and returned home. Purport. The king, after hearing the statement of his daughter, certainly told the great sage Chayavani Muni everything about how his daughter had ignorantly committed such an offense. The Muni, however, inquired from the king whether the daughter was married. In this way, the king, understanding the purpose of the great sage Chayavana Muni, tad abhi prayam agyaya, immediately gave the Muni his daughter in charity and escaped the danger of being cursed. Thus, with the permission of the great sage, the king returned home. Jayavana Muni was very irritable. But since Sukanya had gotten him as her husband, she dealt with him carefully according to his mood. Knowing his mind, she performed service to him without being bewildered. Purport. This is an indication of the relationship between husband and wife. A great personality like Jayavana Muni has the temperament of always wanting to be in the superior position. Such a person cannot submit to anyone. Therefore, Jayavana Muni had an irritable temperament. His wife, Sukanya, could understand his attitude, and under the circumstances, she treated him accordingly. If any wife wants to be happy with her husband, she must try to understand her husband's temperament and please him. This is victory for a woman. Even in the dealings of Lord Krishna with his different queens, it has been seen that although the queens were the daughters of great kings, they placed themselves before Lord Krishna as his maidservants. However great a woman may be, she must place herself before her husband in this way. That is to say, she must be ready to carry out her husband's orders and please him in all circumstances. Then her life will be successful. When the wife becomes as irritable as the husband, their life at home is sure to be disturbed or ultimately completely broken. In the modern day, the wife is never submissive, and therefore home life is broken even by slight incidents. Either the wife or the husband may take advantage of the divorce laws. According to the Vedic law, however, there is no such thing as divorce laws, and a woman must be trained to be submissive to the will of her husband. Westerners contend that this is a slave mentality for the wife, but factually it is not. It is the tactic by which a woman can conquer the heart of her husband, however irritable or cruel he may be. In this case, we clearly see that although Jayavana Muni was not young but indeed old enough to be Sukanya's grandfather, and was also very irritable, Sukanya, the beautiful young daughter of a king, submitted herself to her old husband and tried to please him in all respects. Thus she was a faithful and chaste wife. I've been listening to tapes of Prabhupada speaking in 1975 and 1976 in the United States. And at that time, the reporters understood something about the Krishna consciousness movement that were very conservative and old-fashioned, and that women should be, as Prabhupada's explaining, servient to the husband. So they kept on coming. Many, many, many came and asked Prabhupada questions and wanted to know about this and tried to trap him and make him say things. And Prabhupada would, sometimes he would just say, yes, women reporters would come and say, yes, women are less intelligent. And he would do everything in a very charming way. But one time the women got upset and walked out, and Prabhupada said, why? We're just talking philosophically. Why do they don't have to get angry? But Prabhupada explained everything very carefully. That's actually the natural tendency of a woman to be submissive and subordinate. And that one lady who got upset, she said, but what happens if you don't want to? Want to be? This Sukanya knew, even though it was such a difficult circumstance for her, she was so young, she was like a teenager, and he was like a grandfather in age, and yet she was able to please him due to the strength of her purity and the culture. Text 11. Thereafter, some time having passed, the Asvini Kumara brothers, the heavenly physicians, happened to come to Jayavana Muni's ashram. After offering them respectful obeisances, Jayavana Muni requested them to give him youthful life, for they were able to do so. Purport. The heavenly physicians, like the Asvini Kumaras, could give youthful life even to one who is advanced in age. Indeed, great yogis, with their mystic powers, can even bring a dead body back to life if the structure of the body is in order. And when Prabhupada whenever they'd ask him about women, they should be equal to men. And Prabhupada, you generally bring up the point, if the women are equal to men, why is it that when the man has intercourse with the woman, why is it that the woman has the child and the man can just go away, and then the woman has to be embarrassed by begging from the government? So if they're equal, why does it sometimes that the man will have the child just so to make it equal? I said, no. What is the answer? And he would say, how come it's only the woman who has the child? And then he would, what is the answer? So we have already discussed this in connection with Bali Maharaj's soldiers when they were brought back to their life and their treatment by Sukracharya. Modern medical science has not yet discovered how to bring a dead body back to life or bring youthful energy to an old body. But from these verses we can understand that such treatment is possible if one is able to take knowledge from the Vedic information. The Ashwini Kumaras were expert in Ayurveda, as was Dhanvantari. In every department of material science there is a perfection to be achieved, and to achieve it one must consult the Vedic literature. The highest perfection is to become a devotee of the Lord. To attain this perfection, one must consult Srimad Bhagavatam, which is understood to be the ripe fruit of the Vedic desire tree, Nigama Kalpa Taro Galitam Phalam. So Chayavana Muni said to them, the Ashwini Kumaras, although you are ineligible to drink soma rasa and sacrifice, I promise to give you a full pot of it. Kindly arrange beauty and youth for me, because they are attractive to young women. The great physicians, the Ashwini Kumaras, very gladly accepted Chayavana Muni's proposal. Thus they told the Brahmana, just dive into this lake of successful life. One who bathes in this lake has his desires fulfilled. After saying this, the Ashwini Kumaras caught hold of Chayavana Muni, who was an old, diseased invalid with loose skin, white hair, and veins visible all over his body, and all three of them entered the lake. Chayavana, Prabhupada explains in the purport, that Chayavani was so old that they needed to help him get in the lake. Thereafter, three men with very beautiful bodily features emerged from the lake. They were nicely dressed and decorated with earrings and garlands of lotuses. All of them were of the same standard of beauty. The chaste and very beautiful Sukanya could not distinguish her husband from the two Ashwini Kumaras, for they were equally beautiful. Not understanding who her real husband was, she took shelter of the Ashwini Kumaras. Sukanya could have selected any of them as her husband, for one could not distinguish amongst them. But because she was chaste, she took shelter of the Ashwini Kumara so that she could inform her who her actual husband was. A chaste woman will never accept any man other than her husband, even if there be someone equally as handsome and qualified. The Ashwini Kumaras were very pleased to see Sukanya's chastity and faithfulness. Thus they showed her Chayavana Muni, her husband, and after taking permission from him, they returned to the heavenly planets in their plane. Thereafter, King Sarayati, desiring to perform a sacrifice, went to the residence of Chayavana Muni. There he saw by the side of his daughter a very beautiful young man, as bright as the sun. After receiving obeisances from his daughter, the king, instead of offering blessings to her, appeared very displeased and spoke to her as follows. Oh, unchaste girl, what is this that you have desired to do? You have cheated the most respectable husband who is honored by everyone. For I see that because he was old, diseased, and therefore unattractive, you have left his company to accept as your husband this young man who appears to be a beggar from the street. This shows the values of Vedic culture. According to the circumstances, Sukanya had been given a husband who was too old to be compatible with her. Because Chayavana Muni was diseased and very old, he was certainly very unfit for the beautiful daughter of King Sarayati. Nonetheless, her father expected her to be faithful to her husband. When he suddenly saw that his daughter had accepted someone else, even though the man was young and handsome, he immediately chastised her as asati, unchaste because he assumed that she had accepted another man in the presence of her husband. According to Vedic culture, even if a young woman is given an old husband, she must respectfully serve him. This is chastity. It is not that because she dislikes her husband, she may give him up and accept another. This is against Vedic culture. According to Vedic culture, a woman must accept the husband given to her by her parents and remain chaste and faithful to him. Therefore, King Sariyati was surprised to see a young man by the side of Sukanya. Oh, my daughter, you were born in a respectable family. How have you degraded your consciousness in this way? How is that you are shamelessly maintaining a paramour? You will thus degrade the dynasty of both your father and your husband to hellish life. Purport. It is quite clear that according to Vedic culture, a woman who accepts a paramour, a second husband, in the presence of the husband she has married, is certainly responsible for the degradation of her father's family and the family of her husband. The rules of Vedic culture in this regard are strictly observed in the respectable families of Brahmins, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas even today. Only the Sudras are degraded in this matter. For a woman of the Brahmin, Kshatriya, or Vaishya class to accept another husband in the presence of a husband she has married, or to file for divorce, or accept a boyfriend or paramour, is unacceptable in the Vedic culture. Therefore, King Sariyati, who did not know the real facts of Chayavani Muni's transformation, was surprised to see the behavior of his daughter. 22. Sukanya, however, being very proud of her chastity, smiled upon hearing the rebukes of her father. She smilingly told him, "My dear father, this young man by my side is your actual son-in-law, the great sage Chayavana, who was born in the family of Bhrigu." Although the father chastised the daughter, assuming that she had accepted another husband, the daughter knew that she was completely honest and chaste, and therefore she was smiling. It is good to know that you have done the right thing, and then you can keep smiling and happy if one has acted correctly, even if one is getting chastised. When she explained that her husband, Chayavani Muni, had been transformed into a young man, she was very proud of her chastity, and thus she smiled as she talked with her father. Thus Sukanya explained how her husband had received the beautiful body of a young man. When the king heard this, he was very surprised, and in great pleasure he embraced his beloved daughter. Chayavani Muni, by his own prowess, enabled King Sariyati to perform the Soma Jagya. The Muni offered a full pot of soma ras to the Aswini Kumaras, although they were unfit to drink it. King Indra, being perturbed and angry, wanted to kill Chayavana Muni, and therefore he impetuously took up his thunderbolt. But Chayavana Muni, by his powers, paralyzed Indra's arm that held the thunderbolt. Although the Aswini Kumaras were only physicians, and were therefore excluded from drinking soma ras and sacrifices, the demigods agreed to allow them henceforward to drink it. King Sariyati begot three sons named Uttanabarhi, Anarta, and Burisena. From Anarta came a son named Revata. O Maharaj Prikit, subduer of enemies, this Revata constructed a kingdom known as Kushastali in the depths of the ocean. There he lived and ruled such tracts of land as Anarta, etc. He had 100 very nice sons, of whom the eldest was Kukumdi. I think the Anarta is Gujarat. Taking his own daughter, Revati, Kakumdi went to Kankudmi, went to Lord Brahman Brahmaloka, which is transcendental to the three modes of material nature, and inquired about a husband for her. So Brahmaloka is also transcendental. When Kakudmi arrived there, Lord Brahma was engaged in hearing musical performances by the Gandharvas and had not a moment to talk with him. Therefore Kakudmi waited, and at the end of the musical performance, he offered his obeisances to Lord Brahma and thus submitted his long-standing desire. After hearing his words, Lord Brahma, who is most powerful, laughed loudly and said to Kakudmi, O King, all those who you may have decided within the core of your heart to accept as your son-in-law have passed away in the course of time. 27 Chaturyugas have already passed while he was waiting. Those upon whom you may have decided are now gone, and so are their sons, grandsons, and other descendants. You cannot even hear about their names. So where does our pride go when we think of this? And when we hear, you know, that we hear that women should be subordinate to men. The women all probably cringe inside because this is, after all, Kali Yuga in the 20th century, and all the men, yeah, I knew all along they should be do that. But what happens in next life? It may be completely reversed. The other one may be crying and the other one saying, yeah, they should be doing it, and then reverse hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times, like Subdumya, back and forth and back and forth, changing and changing, and it's all meaningless. No one can remember the names anymore after a short time. Purport. During Lord Brahma's day, 14 Manus or 1,000 Mahayugas pass away. Brahma informed King Kukudmi that 27 Mahayugas, each consisting of the four periods of Satya, Treta, Dwapara, and Kali, had already passed. All the kings and other great personalities born in those yugas had now departed from memory into obscurity. This is the way of time as it moves through past, present, and future. O King, leave here, he said, Brahma said, and offer your daughter to who? Lord Baladev, who is still present. He is most powerful. Indeed, he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose plenary portion is Lord Vishnu. Your daughter is fit to be given in charity to him. Lord Baladev is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One who hears and chants about him is purified. Because he is always the well-wisher of all living entities, he has descended with all his paraphernalia to purify the entire world and lessen its burden. Who's ever seen a deity of Revati? Kotai. You don't know. Where?
Talavan.
Dalaji, of so many. And the one that you were thinking of first? In Jagannath Puri, Gopinath. Yes. Having received this order from Lord Brahma, Kukudmi offered obeisances to him and returned to his own residence. He then saw that his residence was vacant, having been abandoned by his brothers and other relatives who were living in all directions because of fear of such higher living beings as the Yakshas. Thereafter, the king gave his most beautiful daughter in charity to the supremely powerful Baladev, and then retired from worldly life and went to Vadarikashram to please Naranarayan. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 9th canto, 3rd chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Marriage of Sukanya and Chayavan Muni. Srimad Bhagavatam, Srimad Prabhupada.